Okay, so what's the definition? So we're talking about Christianity, Islam, part one. I guess what's the definition of Avodah Zarah? What do you think the definition of Avodah Zarah is, based on your reading, your sources that you've read? Yeah, what do you think?
I was getting the sense that mahabil between Islam and Christianity is that the fact that Muhammad is only a messenger, not considered part of the divinity.
Right. Before we get into the between Islam and Christianity, how would you define Avodah Zarah?
Something other than monotheism.
Okay. So it's something other than monotheism. Because you could argue that Avodah Zarah can mean someone who believes in other types of worship, is it an issue of one God, multiple gods? Is it maybe a place where they serve one God in a strange way? I mean, think about the literal translation of Avodah Zarah means strange worship. But it seems that, because I'm wondering, we had this debate about Islam, right? We saw the Meiri in Avodah Zarah, Daf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, who seems to cite this debate where he first says that, the Yishma'elim, the Muslims, so they're not over the Avodah Zarah, presumably because they believe in one God. Right, they're monotheistic, and then they cite the Chachmei Sfarad, the Sephardi rabbis, and we saw the Chidushi Aran in Sanhedrin Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. I think the English translation, I don't think, was so 100% accurate, or maybe it's not so clear. Why did the Ran think that Islam was a Avodah Zarah? Remember that? Why do you think there was a Avodah Zarah? So I think, right, he said he seems to say because they bow down, and not simply as a form of respect, which could be basically the debate could simply be maybe how you define Avodah Zarah. Is it monotheism versus polytheism, or is it maybe is some kind of, if you're bowing down to something, then maybe is that a form of Avodah Zarah?
What is bowing if not a form of respect?
Well, I think what he's saying is Shalo behidur levad him. No, in other words, as a form of deification, as somehow
I think that's the argument that's, they're trying to make, is that we're doing it out of respect.
Right.
They're doing something else. So
they're doing something.
What makes it something else?
Yeah, it's unclear. Like the we saw. I think there was the Rambam clearly wins the day, because the Rambam is of the view that the Muslims are not Avodah Zarah. The Muslims do not worship Avodah Zarah. They do not worship idolatry. We saw that Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg, who's a modern-day post-egg, he passed away a number of years back. So he's supportive of the Ran's position. He's supportive of the Ran's position that might be Avodah Zarah. That it might be, because it's strange worship. It's worshiping, the different religion. But Rabbi Avadi Yosef, I think it's more of the standard view, where he says that it seems that he takes the view that the Ran, had he known what the Rambam said, then he wouldn't have paskin, he wouldn't have ruled the way he ruled. Right? He says in Yabi Omer Chelek Zayin Yeridah Yud Beis in Source 5, he says the Afilu Haran Sheomer Shehol Mishtachim Lifneim Kavoda Shel Elohut Din Avozar Yeshlahem, that since they bow down in front of them like in the manner of how someone worships a god, so it has the law of Avodah Zarah. Yeshlomar She'ilu Hava Shamiale Komashkos Varamba Bichuva Lo Yomar Kein. Had he heard all about what the Rambam wrote, he wouldn't have held this way. Because it seems that, I'm wondering whether Rav Avadi Yosef thinks that the Ran was unaware of exactly what the Muslims did. And is it a debate in law, or is it a debate in fact? And I think Rav Yosef seems to say that it's a debate in fact, or the Ran was not aware. And that seems to be the standard view, that one God monotheism is considered not Avodah Zarah, and polytheism is Avodah Zarah, therefore Islam is not considered Avodah Zarah. Right? Yeah.
Eva? Two questions.
Yeah, sure.
First of all, I just opened up here to the Tzitz Eliezer. So he says, he's talking about bowing down to prophets.
Right.
Rather than to the one God, which they consider Allah as the
right.
one God. But if it's the prophet, then it's, again, different. It's a different issue. But my question actually was something else. Is, let's say, like, worshipping Baal
right.
is considered Avodah Zarah.
Right.
Right? So that was, like, way back. So
right.
they're worshipping one God.
Well, I think that, I don't
the
think...
The way
I,
that they worship the God
is
like...
Right, so I don't think that, I think Baal is a god of a, who has a particular power.
Right.
So the difference might be that, right, they're worshiping one god, but there still are many different, in other words, if you worship Baal, you don't believe that Baal controls the master of the whole world. You believe that Baal is, I'm not sure if Baal is the fertility
right.
god or whatever it is. In other words, there were different gods. Avodah Zarah, it seems to be understood, is that you, even if you worship one particular god, but you don't believe that that god is the, there's one god in control of everything.
That goes back to the Rambam's point, I think, which is that Islam is not Avodah Zarah because they recognize the unity of God.
Right, right, right. So that's, right, so that's the, right, so that's, you know, that's something that's generally understood, but the, you know, it's important to know the Ran's position as well. Like, it's not so well known, but that position was rejected. Convenient for the Rambam is, for most of the Rambam's life, he lived in Muslim areas and not in Christian areas. So it's just interesting that the Rambam was of the opinion that Islam is not Avodah Zarah and Christianity is, whereas, you know, the Rabbeinu Tam, we'll see, the Rabbeinu Tam's position was a little bit unclear. The, you know, the Rambam, in if you noticed in the Rambam, let's say in Hilchos, this happens in a few places. Do you notice in source 2, source 7, in Hilchos Macholos Asuros, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Zayin, there's like an editor's note. Do you notice that? There's an asterisk.
Yeah.
So it's a few times. So the Rambam basically, it seems that when he's talking about, this is talking about Yai Nesech, you know, wine from a non-Jew. So he's talking about wine actually from someone who worships idols or worships the stars, right? Akum means Ovde Kochavim Mazalot, someone who worships the stars and the constellations. But the Rambam's original text said Notzrim, Christians, but because there were no pagans in the Rambam's days, in his culture, they were either Muslims, Jews, or Christians for the most part. So he wrote Notzrim, but presumably that text got censored. And so therefore, depending on which edition of the Rambam you have, some of them will say Notzrim, and some say Ovdei Kochavim. But the Rambam clearly held that Notzrim they worship Avodah Zarah. Now, do Notzrim believe in well, so they, right, so they believe that there's one God.
The Father, the Son.
Right, so they believe that there is one God overall. So first of all, there's different types of Christians. I'm not a bucky, I'm not an expert in different types of Christianity. So the Christians who believe in the Trinity, so that's the Rambam felt that is considered Avodah Zarah, that's strange worship, because you believe in there's no unity. It's presumably the Rambam felt very strongly about the unity of God, and the.
How did the Rambam, the other forms of Christianity didn't exist?
Right. So I'm saying, if you, I forgot that there are other types of Christianity that do believe in the unity of God. There are some, but
I think also there's the distinction between the sects that have a lot more. I mean, it talks about
right.
this, like specific image worship, I guess,
right.
as opposed to not really. So
right. It's interesting that right. If you would worship the image of I don't know, Muhammad, but still you're not viewing him as a god, as a prophet. So that's what the Ran is getting at. You're worshiping maybe his image, or you're worshiping some messenger. But mm-hmm. the issue is, you know, who do you view as the god? And is generally understood as the question of monotheism versus polytheism, and the question of the Trinity was a debate. So Rabbeinu Tam, if you notice, that's the in Sanhedrin Daf Samach Gimel Amud Beis, that's source 8. So the Ram. So what case is he talking about there? What's the specific issue there with Rabbeinu Tam?
It's permitted to receive an oath.
Right. Are you allowed to enter into an oath? Are you allowed to cause Are you allowed to cause a non-Jew to issue an oath? Are you allowed to enter into a partnership with a non-Jew because a non-Jew might issue an oath? Now, who are the non-Jews in Rabbeinu Tam? Where did Rabbeinu Tam live? Live in France. So who are the non-Jews in Rabbeinu Tam's times?
Christians,
right? It's not a trick question. It's Christians, right? So Rabbeinu Tam, so the Christians, so he's talking about the Christians. And he says you can enter into a partnership with a Christian and you're not concerned that he may issue an oath. And why is he not concerned? He says, even though they're mentioning the name of heaven, and their intention is for something else, it's not considered idolatry. They still have in mind for the one who created whatever they're saying. They have in mind that there's one God who created all. Even though they engage in what's called shituf, they believe in a kind of partnership that between it's the Trinity. Shem Shemayim v'davar acher lo ashkan da aser ligrom lacherim lishatev. We don't find that it's forbidden to cause others to do shituf. So there are three ways to understand Rabbeinu Tam's position. What are three ways to understand? Tell me one way to understand his position. What's the position he's taking? What would you say about Christianity? What's one way of understanding what we say about Christianity?
He says they
believe
in heaven. They believe in
right, therefore what? Would he say?
It's not about
desire. So number one is you could take the view that believing in the Trinity is not avodah zarah, right? And that the Ramah in Aruch Chaim Kuf Nun Vav Sif Aleph quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, basically cites Rabbeinu Tam's position. He says you could enter into a partnership with a non-Jew nowadays because even though they mention the Avodah Zarah, nevertheless their intention is to one God, but they're doing Shituf. So you can simply say that essentially, and this probably was the position of, this might have been the position of the Meiri, that the Christians are not idolaters because Shituf is not a violation. Shituf is not a is not a problem for who?
For them.
So that's unclear, right? So do you say that it's not a problem for them, or do you say it's not a problem for us, or it's not a violation of Avodah Zarah for us, right? In other words, is it? Are we saying is there a different standard of Avodah Zarah for a Christian or for a Jew? Okay. In other words, this wasn't the note of Yehuda, but the Shach and the Ramah understood. I don't know if it was in the sources, but the Shach was under the opinion that what Rabbeinu Tam merely held was that for a Christian, they don't violate Avodah Zarah when they worship Christianity, when they subscribe to the Christian ideology of the Trinity. It's not a Avodah Zarah for them, but for us it is. And, Shavuos is coming up. So I mentioned this before, I think, that Chazal say that when Rus converts, according to Chazal, when Rus decides to stay with Naomi and she converts, so Chazal say when she says, Amech, Ami, Elokai, Elokai, so literally, the pshat, the simple reading is that Ruth's gonna stay with Naomi, but Chazal understand that what she's doing is she's accepting different mitzvos upon herself. So one of them is, I think it's a lokai chalokai, where she says, "I am now not gonna worship Avodah Zarah anymore." So the question is, what do you mean? As a non-Jew, there was no change between when you were a non-Jew and a Jew. In other words, Chazal understand that every little amech, amil, lakai, lakai, all those different, asher, talin, alin, all those different phrases are different new acceptances that she's taken upon herself. Differences between being a non-Jew and a Jew. So the question is, how is accepting upon yourself not to worship idolatry, how is that a change from the previous status? If non-Jews are also forbidden to engage in idolatry, And I think some of the one of the Rishonim said that the point was beforehand she wasn't prohibited to engage in Shituv, to believe in Shituv, but now she was forbidden. In other words, so one way of understanding Rabbi Tam is that what he's saying is that you're right, for a Christian it's not considered a Avodah Zarah, but for us it is considered a Avodah Zarah. Okay, we have different responsibility, different halachos. Another possibility is to say no, he really believed, the Meir is of the view, I believe that Christianity is not a Avodah Zarah, because they believe there's one creator, and that's the Rambam is very focused on unity. But others can say it's just one, as long as one creator is in charge and watching over everything, that's, if you believe in that, you're not violating Avodah Zarah. And the third is what the Noda Behuda wrote. I mean, Ravad Yosef in Source 10, Nichavada, Simon Chelek Dal, Simon Memhei, so he cites the Noda Behuda, who says, this is a specific halacha that pertains only to issuing oaths. This is not a broad, this is simply, we're saying that it's not a violation for a non-Jew to make an oath, Bishituf, using the Trinity, but has no implications in general as whether it's a Avodah Zarah. So the point is there are three ways to understand Rabbi Tam, right? Number one is he really believes that Christianity is not a Avodah Zarah. That's generally not accepted. It seems not accepted by mainstream poskim. Second is that for Christians it's not a Avodah Zarah, for Jews it is. And third, it's very limited to issuing an oath, but even for a non-Jew, it would be a violation to worship worship Christianity, to believe in the Trinity. Okay? So that's where you have Rabbi Avad Yosef, who therefore he holds that based on this, that you cannot enter into a church. What are the reasons potentially why you can't enter into a church? What are the reasons why? Let's say you're not going. Hopefully, you're not going for the service. So what's the reason why we don't go into, why would we not go into a church? So you say Maris Ayin, so it's actually a different word than Maris Ayin. You say Lipneiver? No, that's not the yeah. That's the yeah. No, it's close to Maris Ayin. It's called Cheshad. Difference between Maris, good definitions, the difference between Maris Ayin and Cheshad is Maris Ayin is someone's going to see that you're doing something and they're going to think that it's permitted. Cheshad is that they're going to suspect that you're a bad person. So we have a responsibility of Yisim Nikiyim. We have a responsibility to be Naki in the eyes of God and also in the eyes of man. So the issue here is one of Cheshad. It's close to Maris Ayin. So they might suspect that you are, that you're worshipping idolatry. Obviously, if it's a tourist site, so let's question whether that how strict that is. Did they make a blanket rule? You could be drawn after idolatry, and also the other issue is you're giving. It says al tifnu al ha'elilim. You're giving honor to something repugnant by simply going in, and because you want to go there, you're obviously giving honor to something that is repugnant in the eyes of Judaism. I didn't ask you to see this, but if you look in, this is in Hebrew, but in source in page 48-49, this is there's a tshuva by Mare HaBazak. It's put up by Eretz Chemda. So they really go through. I mean, it's all in Hebrew, but they go through the different positions here, and they talk about the different extenuating circumstances. So are there ever extenuating circumstances? So they talk about state ceremonies. So apparently the London, it says in this tshuva, so he writes that the London Beis Din, I'm not sure if it's actually this tshuva, but the London, we're going to see a footnote here, but the London Beis Din apparently did allow, they have rabbis go to the church for certain state ceremonies because of a concern of Ava. What's Ava? That they're concerned if you don't go, so they're going to take it out on the Jews. So it's always a question, is that applicable, is it not applicable? But they write that you shouldn't recite any Tehillim. If you go in there, they shouldn't recite Tehillim. And you have to clarify whether it's really Ava. Rav Avad Yosef was against this leniency. Rav Moshe Sternbach, had talked about voting in a room that's adjacent to a church. So Rav Moshe Sternbach is generally very, very machmir on most things in life. He's like an Eidi Haredi, he's living in Yerushalayim. He's generally extremely, extremely, extremely machmir on most things. This one, he was a rabbi in Johannesburg. So he can be more lenient, I guess. So there he said, so they had a tshuva where he said that you can vote in a room adjacent to the church. And Rav Chaim David Alevi was lenient if the church was no longer in use. So this was, and then we cited that the most lenient view is Rav Nachum Rabinovich. Yeah, if you look here, actually, on page 49, we'll just read it in Hebrew, I'll translate it. The most lenient view that there is in number footnote 12. So he writes here that Rav Nachum Elazar Rabinovich, he says, L'dato hanotzrim hayom kevar lo bemet matminim biyoter me el echad, the or kel echad, the Christians nowadays don't believe in more than one God. Vav shehem mitpalim ledvarim acharim elu rak together mitvachim mashiach shelahem, that basically they prayed other things, that's not like changing, you know, their ultimate view. V'lochein hem lo mugdarim ka'ovdei avodah zarah, therefore not considered ovdei avodah zarah. V'lo chal al beit tiflatam din beit avodah zarah. So their church, their house of prayer is not considered a beit of avodah zarah. Obviously, Jews now believe in Christianity. Right, because there's a kfira. There's not everything that's kfira is avodah zarah. Right? In other words, there could be, you can make an argument that, I mean, you know, we've had, you know, the other streams of Judaism may not believe in certain basic fundamental principles of faith, right? So if you really believe, if you believe the definition of avodah zarah is anything that's kfira, anything that denies one of the fundamental principles of faith, then you would not be allowed to go into, you know, perhaps, right, or other synagogues that don't believe in certain fundamental principles of faith. So but there seems to be a distinction between what's considered avodah zarah and what's considered kfira. That's an important point. And then he writes that Alkei Akach Lo Gozru, you know, therefore they didn't make this decree. Lachain Hu Hora Shelamasa Also Likares Mitzad Harchek Minachiyu Min Hadomalo. So he said it's not appropriate. You really should distance yourself. It's not appropriate to go into a church. Achain Lesser B'Makom Tzarach Gadol. So he's the most lenient view. Not many poskim are lenient in this regard. But Rabinovich is lenient in a case of Tzorach Gadol.
Didn't we learn about another, was it the Meiri?
The Meiri, yeah, so it's basically
lenient, right?
Yeah, I'm saying, but he's a Rishon.
Right.
So the question is, like at the end of the day, very often you can find throughout the Mesorah, throughout the tradition, you will find different positions that take lenient views, and the question is what's accepted La halacha.
Right,
yeah.
We have Rav Soloveitchik on the other hand doesn't even want you to watch.
Soloveitchik doesn't want you to watch TV.
Yeah.
Right. So
he's totally watched the royal wedding.
Okay. So anyway. So Rav Soloveitchik, he very much Rav Soloveitchik, right. On the flip side, you have Nefesh HaRav, Rav Soloveitchik, where he writes that when Kennedy was assassinated, so he was upset that he says, because you're giving like kavod. What's he saying here? You're like he's saying you're bringing it into your house, right? You're bringing it into your house. Okay, so is this halacha? Is this hashkafa? You know, how would you view it?
He didn't comment on having a TV.
Right, he did not comment on having a TV. I don't know when he would comment on having a TV. Well, the shows probably back then or not, whatever. Not necessarily the shows right now. But you know, even lo savi toeva b'sof beisecha. So, right. So, it could be another topic. But okay, maybe not. But what I'm saying is that he felt very strongly that, you know, this was. Listen, we're not sensitized to this. I mean, we think it's all nice, it's all beautiful. It could be maybe for us it's not so challenging. See, what's interesting is like for intellectuals like Rav Soloveitchik, so they get their concern, and not just it's halachic also, but they're concerned with, you know, these things which could lead us off the derech, when in reality there are other, you know, low culture that leads us off the derech.
Yeah.
Which I by the way, underlying a lot of this You know, it's from a halachic standpoint. So we're debating, you know, is this Avodah Zarah, is it not Avodah Zarah, is it going to lead us astray, is it not going to lead us astray? There's an underlying current that may not be purely halachic, but I think there's a very important hashkafic message in terms of, you know, what's leading us towards the Derech Hashem and what things, you know, lead us away from Derech Hashem.
But I have two questions. First of all, I'm wondering if there are any tshuvot specifically related to, like, family members and events that take place in churches.
Yeah,
I don't know if anybody's asked that question and had a published response.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. The only thing they've talked about are state ceremonies and, you know, it says Torah Gadol, so I haven't seen anything published on that.
Okay, and then my second question is, I mean, a little later, and I guess we'll get to it, there were, like, leniencies even regarding objects, like, that if you're not imbuing the object with the same significance that, like, the religious people would, that in theory it sounded like there were people saying you could wear a cross if, like, it doesn't mean anything to you, that it's just for beautification,
right,
that you could. So I'm wondering...
That they don't say the same thing in terms of going to a base of Avodah Zarah.
But why?
Because they're different. What is considered... because it's defined... The question is, I guess, if there's, like, a cross as part of something else, is it defined, is it something that people are worshiping versus the church? This is an object that is used for worship. If the church...
Well, but people don't agree about that.
If a church is not... There are post-gim who are lenient, that if a church is no longer used for service anymore...
But she's saying it is
used for service, but it's not being used for service by you. It's
no, but that's the...
You're just...
No, but nobody, but nobody's using... If something... I don't know, if you have a... a watch. I remember when we were in Switzerland. Yeah, so they had all these... There's a watch I was going to buy that it had a little, like, a cross on it, or it looked like... Whatever. So I felt a little weird about it. But halachically... So I didn't get it. Yeah. But you know, it was something, I don't know if it, okay, but the point
Swiss
is, that, yeah, it's one of these Swiss Army thingies,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but nobody, my point, nobody worships that, I'm saying.
Here's my question. What about, like, if you're in an airport and there's a non-denominational chapel, right? That's a room that's used for, in theory, worship, but it's not specifically used for worship, and you can enter a room like that. So what gives the church building more of a...
Because it's used as a... Because that's what it's built
up. But so is the chapel.
Different. I don't think it's designated. I'm not sure if it's designated. This is a house. This is a building. This is a room. It's designated specifically for Avodah Zarah.
They didn't say all crosses. They were saying a cross is just... Like, they weren't talking about a cross that was a rosary. Like, a rosary cross
was used for worship.
Right. You wouldn't be allowed to wear. Whereas they were talking about something like a piece of jewelry that was just in the form of...
Right. I think that's a difference. If something is used as designated as a house for Avodah Zarah, as a place of Avodah Zarah, so that's one thing. If this is not questions... You find the chefs of the object or the place as a place designated for it. I don't know if it's different people, you know, praying it. I don't know if that's that was the issue about the Shach took a strict view. This is in source 17, where the Shulchan Aruch rules in Yoredeah Simon Kuf Mem Aleph Sif Aleph. That really called Shlomim Shel Avodas Kochavim and Nimtzayim Bekvar Masurim, that all images of idolatry are forbidden. The Stam Lashem Avodas Kochavim Nasu, right? That one can presume that it was created for the purpose of idolatry, right? So then the Shach says, but if it's those which you hang on your neck, and he says Hainu Biyadua Shlo Yishtachav Alo. So he says, if you know that you didn't bow down to that one did not bow down to it, so then it might not be a problem.
Right. And, see, this is not like a coin. This is like a cross hanging around your neck. Might not be a problem.
Right. But that's...
I mean, I don't know why anybody would want to.
No. But that is biyadua. That's biyadua shlo yishtachav alo. We're talking about a church. There's a place where biyadua. It's known that they prayed in it. That's different.
Oh, yeah. I know. I was just going back to the object thing.
Right. So,
yeah. So, say there's a church that's no longer being used.
Right.
You can't buy that and make it into a shul.
That's a separate question.
There are cases where that has happened. There are certainly cases where shuls have absorbed artifacts from churches into their shul. I remember like the Lloyd Street Synagogue in Baltimore had like these huge chandeliers that had been purchased from a church that went out of business.
When they lose the status, right? So that's because they lose. I don't want to speak definitively about that because I'm not. It could be that it loses, right, once it loses its status. So first of all, chandelier may be different than using the cross or something.
Right, but meaning it has to lose its status by, like, being something else.
It's not enough
for it to just be, like, a church that is no longer used for service because it's still a church.
Right, but I'm saying, but if a church is no longer used for service, then you could go to the museum.
Well, then, like, the tourists.
Right.
We never have opinions here that you certainly could not.
Right, they're different. I'm saying they're different. I'm saying there's more room to be lenient. There's more room to be lenient when it's only... when it's only a tourist. You're right. They're different opinions. Can you lose that status? How do you lose that? Either by not worshiping it anymore, or by totally changing it. Right, take the chandelier from the church. Does it lose its status?
Well,
right?
Like even the songs.
Right. We'll get to the songs. Yeah. So essentially, the song question sort of relates to that same question. Well, there again, the songs could be different because they have a status of something. Is it tangible? We'll get to that in a second. Let's go in order now. What? No. It's good. No, it's a good. These are all good questions. In other words, are we saying? No, you're raising a good question. Are we saying that you could simply transform the status of that, or is it different because it has no substance to it? So maybe more lenient with it. But so regarding we have Ravadi Yosef, who talks about this this golden medallion, and he was lenient. It seems the poskim Ravadi Yosef and Rav Moshe Feinstein are both lenient when it comes to use of idolatrous images if that's clearly not worship. It doesn't take on the chefza of an object of idolatry of Vazara.
Was that more
of
Misham Eva? I know it didn't say it, but right. Was that more about Misham Eva?
There's no Eva there, about stamps. They talked about
where the rabbi received something from the king.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Thing for a rav to be
right. Yeah, no, I hear what you say. You had that rav. This, who is this? This is Rav Yaakov Meir. He always wore this this medallion when he went to visit this person. So you could have argued that it was because of Eva. When Rav, at least the way Rav Avadya Yosef interprets it, is that that's not the case. He said this is in general we hold like this. And then we have a site to Rav Moshe Feinstein's Tshuva on Yoredeya, Chelek Av Siman, Samech Tes, where he says that you can collect stamps. So, you could have interpreted that case, it's a good point, as the case of Eva allowing him to use the object, but it seems that Rav Yosef and Moshe allow you just to use it, notwithstanding that. I think in the next, we haven't done this, in the next section could be talking about, there's an issue about the solar system, other planets. Is that an issue? But there's something that Rabbi Schechter wrote something in Jewish press that got a lot of social media attention. But that's the same thing. In other words, if something is, it might be different, but I'm saying is if something that is sometimes used for Avodah Zarah and it's clearly not created for that, it's clearly not used for that, is that considered Avodah Zarah? So that's an interesting question. So at least with regard to these things, just the picture of this, the cross and the stamp, that we don't think is a problem. Again, is it the object itself? Is it the concern that you might get, lured to worship it? These are interesting questions. Is it only the concern? When it comes to the Svarim, the Sifrei Avodah Zarah, I have to say in my Shabbos Hagadol Drasha, I did quote some stuff, some Christian stuff, but I think I was okay because I was. Why was it okay? Because I'm the rabbi, so I can do what I want. No, but why was it okay? I think
you also presented it as something that's not true.
That's rejected, right? Yeah. So I clearly presented that it's not rejected. I have to say, I'm a little comfortable saying this, but I was. Let me tell you, I'm paying this. So this is my discomfort here. So So I don't want to have Seamus. You know, I try not to have Seamus because these things can get, you know, things can get, you want to make sure that they can get discarded respectfully, especially because there are these Christian texts that you know, I want to make sure to get rid of it. And then I found at the end, as I'm delivering my Shabbos to Gadol Drash, I noticed there's one Shem Hashem that I forgot. So whatever. So I wasn't sure what to do. But okay. But in any case, so the question is, you know, there's a concern when it comes to idolatrous books. So there's a pasuk which says what? V'losasur achrei levavchem, v'achrei neichem. So, neichem refers to your eyes. I would call it maybe low culture. And Levavcha, maybe high culture, maybe studying of heretical works. There's an interesting question in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, or the end of Parshas Noach, that many of the Mefarshim ask, is that we only find out that God chooses Avram, and he says to Avram, Lech Lecha me'aretzcha melatcha, I want you to leave. And we have all these great stories about him, about Avram, you know, beating, you know, smashing idols, and for all you people who think like we don't quote Midrashim, no less than the Rambam quotes this. Okay, so even the Rambam followers, okay, among us, the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, the Rambam quotes this Medrash as true. He quotes in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, this is what happened, that Avram smashed other idols. So then the question is, well, if this is such an important part of the story, why do we never find out why Avram Avinu was chosen? Why do we only find out that he was chosen? And there are many different answers to this. The answer that I want to share with you, which is relevant to this, is that the Ramban writes, the reason why we don't mention why Avraham Avinu was chosen, because they don't have to talk all about different idolatry and idolatrous, different idols, different avodah zarah, and Torah didn't want to get into the detail about it. There are other, perhaps, more answers which resonate with me more, but it's interesting based on our topic. Ramban said we didn't want to get into details about Avram's. If you're weighing the value of telling these stories about Avram, early stories about Avram, versus the disadvantages of mentioning in detail about the different idols. But in any case, so there's this concern of lo sasuru acharei levavchem. The Rav Moshe at the end of the day says that what are you allowed to read it? You're not allowed to read it. At the end of the day, what does he say? And this is in Yoredeya Chelik Beis Simon Kuf Yud Aleph, he says at the end of the day. So first he says, you're allowed to study to understand, but it's only for the Gedolei Hador, B'Torah V'Yerushimayim, V'lo L'Stam B'nei Adam. So he's obviously nervous about getting lured away from, you know, from this. He's getting lured away to Christianity, and for him it's about motivation, right? For Moshe, it seems to be about motivation. You have to be on a certain level, and if you're reading it, obviously, you're mocking it, you know, then it's not forbidden. And I think there's, you know, I assume that in most yeshiva high schools, they take what's called regents exams. And so in the regents, part of the regents curriculum, so they have to study this stuff. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, I think it's what he's referring to in Yoredeya. This is in the 20, source 21, and it was Moshe Yoredeya Chelik Beis Simon Nun Gimel. He says when you need to study in the course, you have to tell them that this is wrong. I mean, I don't know if everyone does this, but
nonsense.
But as nonsense, but you have to. I remember when I taught Jewish history. I mean, I taught Jewish history in SK. I don't know, 13-14 years ago. So I taught Islam, but I was not aware of this tshuva. But I just, when I taught them, I showed how the Muslims distorted the Jewish view, and they created their own, you know, their own image, and how they, but it really came from Judaism, but it's a distorted view, and there are a lot of inconsistencies.
It sounds like Islam is not idolatry anyway, so you're good.
You're right. It's good. That's a good point. I was machmer like the Ron. Okay. But yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
What about Greek mythology? People read it now really as like a work of fiction more than anything else.
Okay, so it's fiction. That's probably not.
Okay.
So it's probably not right. That in terms of Los Tesu, right?
Well, nobody. Like,
right. Nobody. Right. Nobody. You probably couldn't go into a pagan, you know, temple that they're still worshiping it, even if you feel it's ridiculous. So the point is, right? There are certain things that depend on that it's avodah zarah, so you have to stay far away, regardless of motivation. And certain things depend on motivation. But I would agree. I think Greek mythology that we think is so ridiculous.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
They don't believe in that fetch thing.
Right. It's just
right.
It's like a fairy tale. Yeah.
Yeah. It's mythology. Right. It's myth. It's a myth.
When I was teaching in sixth grade in Broyers.
Right.
And I had one parent who sent her child to school the next day.
Right.
With the pages stapled together. And she said, I will not allow my child to learn it. I mean, it was sixth grade. Social studies,
comparative religions are learning mythology.
Yes, but the postscript to this thing was I had discussed with her whatever, and she wrote me a note saying that she had to plead mea culpa because she had whatever it is. And I said to myself, does she know what she's saying? She's saying,
yeah. Whatever. As long as you're not translating from the inside the book, then it's fine. Right?
Right.
So yeah. Okay. So then. In terms of the Isuri Hana, right, benefit, so you can't derive benefit. So the question really is Kol Mara Vareach, it's not tangible. So but still it seems that the Gemara in Pesachim, this is in Chavav Amarav, it seems to make the Gemara there seems to tie like different types of Isur Hana. Some things are Asur Bahana because they're bad, like Avodah Zarah. Some things are Asur Hana because they're really good or really holy, like Hekdesh. No, Me'ila, which is the context here, that's a case where you're deriving benefit from something that is holy, right? Like Hekdesh. There you derive benefit from something that's holy. So the Gemara here is, the assumption here is that we're comparing all different categories of Isuri Hana. I'm saying the context in Pesachim is talking about Me'ila, we're talking about something that's Asur Bahana because it's holy, because it's Hekdesh. But so we're saying that, Kol, Mara, Vareach, these are intangible, sight, smell, and sound, so there still is a rabbinic prohibition of deriving benefit from it. And then we have this Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Mem Tesav Aleph, about Al Tifnu El Hoylilim, don't give honor to something repugnant. And based on this, so then we have this discussion about what? About listening to idolatrous music. And they even talk about the shade, sitting in the shade of that's the Chachmas Adam, who talks about you can't be in the shade of a church, because why? Because that's also intangible; it's not physical. So it seems to say that there is this rabbinic prohibition. So then we have this the question is how far do you go in terms of this prohibition of deriving benefit from something intangible? Is it the thing itself, right? In other words, you understand that with the use of tunes. So
practically speaking, what happens?
What happens?
Let's say there's somebody.
Someone's playing, and you're allowed to walk by.
And in shul, and there's, using some melody for kedusha.
Right. So we have the Sefer Chassidim, who says, the Sefer Chassidim seems to say, even not in the context of tefillah. He just says, in general, and then he says, you can't use it for any nigun, even not for davening. So Sefer Chassidim, again, not everyone paskin, not everyone rules like the Sefer Chassidim. It's not a mainstream. The Sefer Chassidim is an interesting, it's an important work, but it's not generally in the Mesorah of halachic. It's not generally brought down the halachic Sefer Chassidim. Sometimes it is, but it's not always. So the Ramah, so what does the Ramah hold in Or Chaim Nun Gimel Chafei? So he says, if the Shlich Tzibur, who's Miranein B'Shirei HaNachrim, so he sings the songs of the Gentiles. So Shlich Tzibur, so we stop him. So what does that mean? What are Shirei Nachrim? So Ratzon Olamar, B'Nigun SheNachrim Menagnim Bo La'Avodos Gilum Shelahem. So it's specifically used, so not simply non-Jewish tunes, but it's specifically used for idolatry, right? And then so it's not it's something that's part of their worship. Now there's not simply that the non-Jew sing, but it's something that is based on the Bach, in Siman Kuf Chaf Zayin that it's specifically used for idolatry. So and then we have it. There's actually a debate here between Rav Avad Yosef and Rav Moshe Feinstein. How we come out? Rav Avad Yosef, what does Rav Avad Yosef hold? Chelek Vav Or Chaim Zayin. What does he hold? What does he hold? He says that he what?
Okay, as long as the intentions are right.
Okay, but why? Now, don't we say that Kol, Mara, and...
It gives the two a new identity.
Right. The Gemara, which says, according to Rav Yosef, the Gemara which says that you can't derive benefit from the Kol of Avodas Chochavim, from the sound of it, so that is, if you are listening to... You can't... If you see the church, they're playing, you know, music... I guess Rav Salvation, if you're watching TV and listening to the church and music, but if you're listening to the music and enjoying it while they're playing it, so that would seem to be forbidden according to Rav Yosef. And then other than that, it just depends about what he calls panim chadashot. It's the tune is something new, whereas Rav Moshe Feinstein is more concerned. He says Hanigim shemezamrim and just in Yordea chelik beis siman nun vav. So he says, "Hanigunim shemizamru hanotzi beveis tiflasam vade asur l'shamram." You're definitely not allowed to listen. Af ayde haradio, vaf ayde. What's the next word?
Phonograph.
Right. Very good. Right. You saw it in English, also, right?
Well, that is hard. Right.
So velo rak hanigunim shemizamrim ata elafilu masha yemizam mikvar af bishivsiku ata lazamir b'osam hanigunim asur. You can't listen. You can't do any of their tunes. Why? Because Efsha Shiyavi Chas V'Shem Lidei Minus. It can lead to heresy. So he's concerned about that. And he says there's also Haskarat Shem Elilim She'asir Balav Lo Yishem Al Picha. I guess they're talking about a song that has the Christian name, you know, the Christian God's name also. So he takes, you know, you wonder, Ramosius is concerned about leading to heresy. So again, I think there's a difference between a Christian tune. Yeah, I wouldn't be so happy if someone would do a Christian tune. There are people who've done non-Jewish tunes. Sometimes I'm not aware of that. Because I'm not so aware. But
the other thing, a lot may not be familiar to people.
Is that a Christian?
Well, it's pop culture.
Was that a Christian?
I have no idea. It was never religious practice. So it was always pop culture. Does anybody differentiate between, like a temporal relationship between the song and practice? Meaning, if you have something, you're passing by a church and they're playing music right then, and it's, you know, in the service, like whatever, versus listening at another time to like Handel's Messiah or one of these like Christian classic,
or like Christmas songs on the radio, like when you're, you know, in a store and they're playing Christmas songs.
Yeah, well, I don't have that. First of all,
not religious songs.
Well, some of them are.
Oh, they were
real.
When you're
listening to the radio, Holy Night or something in December, and you have the BBC playing.
Right. So he's tried out. It seems like you're trying.
Even classical music, some of it is like that's where it comes from.
Right.
Right.
Some of it was written specifically for religious worship, I think.
Sure.
But is it?
Now it's just, you know, a very popular classical piece of music.
So Rav Moshe is very. So I guess there are those probably who. There are those who. You'd have to rely on Rav Yosef in terms of these things to be, you know, more lenient. Although Rav Yosef, Rav Moshe is concerned with minus, so it's hard to know. Like, you know, you're saying if it's clearly not, one could make the argument. I'm not sure, but one could make the argument that if it's something is known to be just completely secular now. You know, people appreciate it for its classical nature.
I mean, I imagine there must be pieces of music that the majority of people appreciate right. for that reason, but like it could be a devoutly religious right. person would listen to it, and it right. would mean something.
So else. I don't know. So that's so I'm wondering if that's if that.
Yeah. Ave Maria, you hear all the time.
Right, that would be true. Also, like the churches that we visit for tourism purposes. But if you're a deeply religious person and you go into some very historical, beautiful church, it probably still does have meaning for you religiously.
Right. Right. Well, again, this, but this is a question of an Isser Hana. So you're saying if you, from a tourist perspective, you're saying if you go to a museum
right.
and a church object and you look at it, so at what point does that violate giving honor to something repugnant?
Right.
That's these are hard. You know, is it simply giving honor to it? Is it something that's going to lead to heresy? I think a lot of people are very lax on this,
right.
and I don't know. Ramosha takes the harder stand. I think there are some, probably those who are lenient, will probably follow Rav Avad Yosef's, position, on this. Listen, I think we, many people, they love when December comes in, so people love all these songs. Does it lead to heresy? I don't know. Is it giving kavod? Is it making sometimes, Baruch Hashem for the Maccabees, right? They made the, because everyone felt that, the Chanukah got always, they all got the short end of the stick. So I think it's a problem a little bit, I think, because people think that, Judaism is inferior to Christianity because they have all these, great songs in December.
It's
and
not even just the songs. It's like you walk down the
right.
street and everything's
right.
lit up. I mean,
okay.
how did you not get
so what I'm
right,
saying...
Except that then what you're getting at
really is the American conception of, December.
Right.
So I'm saying, but so it depends on the song. So it depends if the song is about that, but the song is some very beautiful, holy Christian song
right.
that makes you think about it, so... I understand. Okay, I understand.
If you came upon one of those,
right.
the nativity scenes,
right.
and specifically got Hanukkah from that,
right.
it's
right.
different than just twinkly lights.
Right.
Everywhere.
Yeah. No, I'm saying so. That's
now,
more.
Fifth
that's
Avenue
more.
And seeing all the stars.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So you're drawing a distinction religious between things that just between
right.
music
right.
that is used in the church, let's say,
right.
as opposed to popular.
Yeah. Music. I think there's a difference between that. I would say. Yeah. I think there's a difference.
Right. This is a political thing, but does the National Council have stamina?
I have no clue.
I understand a lot of things.
You're saying in terms of to be about fila?
Yeah.
I do not believe they have a stand on that issue. I'm not aware of them having a stand on this issue. My view in general in terms of when a few times about fila asked me about a non-Jewish song, so my initial response is, are you thinking about the non-Jewish song? You're thinking about the words of God in general. I mean. That's really, at the end of the day, it's supposed to inspire you to whatever the words are. So if it's some kind of song, if some kind of tune that you're thinking about, sort of the non-Jewish tune, the non-Jewish words of the song, instead of enhancing the Jewish words, the words.
It's a very interesting question because there's somebody, let's say, in the shul who likes to use a song during Kedusha.
Right.
I think it's something like the Little Torah, maybe, or who will be your grandfather or something, who will tell you something. About. It's one of those songs that we,
okay.
that the German takes when the kids,
okay.
And it connects because of the words that
right.
know are in the song
right.
itself.
Right, I mean, listen, right, I mean, there's another issue, of course, with even Bali Tfila, who you choose a Jewish tune, but they choose an inappropriate Jewish tune for the words that you're saying, and that's another level. That's only some people appreciate that, some people don't.
Right.
Like you have to.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. Okay, that's in terms of the songs. Again, yeah, Rav Avad Yosef has seems to be lenient when he seems to say that it's those are lenient. Follow Rav Avad Yosef. Moshe Feinstein takes a hard line stand on this.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to praising an idolater, so that's an interesting distinction between we have these great Tanaim who praise these they say how beautiful this non-Jewish woman is. Yeah, this rabbi, he said that he said Rav Shimon Gamliel in the Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf Amud Alef, where he said say Ma Rabba Masach Hashem. I don't know if that was ever a line when a man met a woman and said, Maru Bosef Hashem. I don't know if that's a good pickup line or something. I don't know. But, what? It's very stark. Very stark, right? So, what? You've heard worse?
No, it makes it worse.
It makes it worse, okay. Right. So, okay, but these apparently are rabbis who are like you wonder in general because like is it appropriate for them to be commenting? So this is probably someone who's so like can you appreciate a woman's beauty without having an appropriate desire? So and most people that's a general different question. The presumption here is in the Gemara was that was with Rabbi Akiva when he saw the wife of Tunis Rufus. So he was sad. He was happy. He cried. So he was happy because he knew that he was going to marry her. How he knew that, I don't know. But or Shem Gamliel, when he saw a beautiful non-Jewish woman, he said, "Ma Rabu Masecha Hashem." So there's this kind of distinction between praising a star worshiper, which the Shulchan Aruch Yerodeah Kuf Nun Aleph Seif Yudal says, "Also the Sapir B'Shivchan Shel Ovdei Kochavim." You're not allowed to mention the praise of a star worshipper. You can't even say, look how beautiful is the figure of this star worshipper. LeBron James, he's a wonderful basketball player. Can you praise that? Or like these are, can you praise different things? The big question is, does this only apply to Ovdei Kochavim, right? But what's the distinction Shulchan Aruch makes? What's the distinction Shulchan Aruch makes? Are you allowed to praise ever the qualities of a non-Jew? What's the tension here?
It's to your benefit at some point.
What do you mean by your benefit? If you look in Yerodeah Kufnet Aleph, if you're Dalit, he says, Aval mechavim b'shivcha lodos l'karish baruch hu shabar b'riya noa kazu mutar. There's a distinction that what? Between, are you praising the idolater or you're praising God? It seems like a... You seem like a fine line, right? So like what's the real distinction?
I mean, how often do we think of Hashem when we look at the accomplishment of somebody? I mean,
I also just don't know how this applies nowadays because you don't walk around knowing what religion anybody practices. Like, how do you know?
Right. So let me ask you a question. So why to begin with?
Feeling.
No. So that was the debate. No. But by the way, that was the debate we saw in the Tzitz Eliezer. Where that was the debate? Does this apply to any? Is it only applied to an idolater, or does it apply to non-Jews? What?
We don't know that either here in America.
Okay, that's...
We're walking around New York City. I'm hoping that people in general are not just objectifying women everywhere they go, but like,
right.
By
the way, it's not only objectifying, it's not only, wait, it's not only objectifying women, it's also about, you know what it really is? It's about an issue of role models. It's about celebrities as being role models or sports figures as role models using
high executives or
whatever. Famous people. Right, using famous people. Let's say using famous people as praising them, and when we should...
Accomplishment.
Right.
Not necessarily physical.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, that's the example there, but it's not only that. It's about other things. Sort of looking at them as role models. Like, on the one hand, it's an issue of, he said it could lead to, if you're praising them, then you think that obviously it's because of their religion. But again, the religious piece might not apply nowadays, but I think from a hashkafic standpoint, it's about the values. That's, again, there's the halacha, and then there's the, what the message from this is, and we have to follow the halacha. So the halacha talks about, giving, this may only apply to pagans, so this may not apply nowadays, to non-pagans, but certainly the issue is about learning from their behaviors. And
but not everyone, a Nobel Prize winner, for example.
Right.
You're saying that we shouldn't admire their accomplishments.
I'm not saying that.
Well,
right. So I think that, right, so the question is, right, so I think, I mean, we have...
Well,
physical beauty he's talking about.
Right? No,
you can't admire their accomplishments at all,
right,
are you?
Right.
You're just saying don't hold. You're saying
don't hold them.
Kind of a role
right,
model
right.
For you, if in other areas of their life they're not, you know.
Right. I think there's a.
But if
you're
all
right.
Yeah. There are non-Jews who are mentioned
for sure.
I think there's a distinction, and this might be a hard, to be fair, it's a hard distinction, between praising the person and praising the behaviors. We only saw two distinctions here, between praising God mm-hmm. versus praising the individual, but I think there's also a difference between praising the individual and praising the activities. And there are stories in the Gemara, like, you know, you learn, who do you learn Kibud Av Va'Em from? From Dama Ben Nesina, right? He's the one who the father was sleeping, and he had one of the stones for the Choshen was... And it was under his father's pillow, or the key, was under the father's pillow, and he didn't want to wake up his father. So we're learning this beautiful mitzvah kibbutz from Dama Ben Nesina. So I think that there could be a difference between we see certain values, but the key is not to praise someone like, oh, I'm going to be drawn to this person, I want to be like this person. And again, the truth is, it may be a little hard to relate when it comes to. When it comes to I want to be Christian just like this person, but it's very relevant on a hashkafic level to I want to be like this celebrity, I want to be like this sports figure, I want to be like this famous person, the way they dress, the way they do certain things, we there's styles that they have, they make a lot of money when they sell something, an article of clothing that has their name on it, because people want to identify with them.
I think that's
the message getting from this.
But what do you say with, I mean, like yesterday's news, this black billionaire who paid off
it's wonderful.
The debts. I mean,
yes.
That's,
okay.
You know,
yes. That's wonderful.
Not to be admired. Not
no.
To be
no. Okay. We can. Yeah. So that's it's hard, right? So that I think that we want to learn from their good behaviors. It's very hard. That's what Tzitz Eliezer. The Tzitz Eliezer said. They said the Rambam. He writes here in Chelek Tezvav Siman Mem Zayin. So Reilana Sharam Zabir Bichan Behedya Kidvarin Amurim Sheisur Laseis Lahem Hu Dafke Menachri Hu Ish Kazesh Ovid Vazara. So the Rambam, because the Rambam praised Aristotle, so therefore it must be only someone who worships idolatry. So. That's probably, you know, resonates with us more. That probably, you know, it's only limited to a pagan. But I'm saying, even if you say it's only limited to a pagan.
Although we just defined idolatry as also encompassing Christianity by a lot of the mystics.
Right. 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 So okay. Right. Okay. You're right. So
can we
so,
say that it was like maybe a different time where meaning when they're not that
you're saying
the
if they,
halakha
right.
part of it don't apply, you're but say, maybe the reason they don't address
because of heresy.
Like non-Jews who are doing wonderful, incredible things like this. You know what I mean? Like maybe that didn't come up. Like
right.
You know?
Yeah, no, they
weren't good non-Jews, but they weren't exposed to them in that way, maybe, you know?
Right. In other words, is there something inherent about them?
Like you were involved in that world or you weren't,
right.
So you shouldn't be, of course.
Right.
You know?
It's hard to know with some of these laws whether they are, you know, because there's a concern of heresy, is the law dependent on the reason or is it an objective
right,
law?
Right, no, I understand.
Right, and also, I mean, even with the hashkafic argument,
right.
It seems to me that like none of the behaviors stem from their religious worship anyway. Meaning, there are plenty of Jewish celebrities who are just as ridiculous to follow as non-Jewish celebrities.
The behaviors
things,
not religious.
It's like,
right.
Yeah, it's not related to their religious
practice.
If they were truly religious people, odds are they would be wearing a little bit more
right.
clothing and speaking a little bit more
right.
easily and whatever. So this...
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm saying that back in the day, when they were looking at your Christian, and they were saying when they weren't so nice to Jews... So they would identify that with their behavior. I mean, the Meiri would say that this would definitely not apply to your average Christian now. The Meiri said that these discriminatory laws against the pagan, and presumably those only apply to those people who were unethical because of their religion. But you know, your average religious person now is someone who's more cultured or more. He believes in one God who's, you know, deciding, who's in charge of everything, and therefore people are more moral, people are more ethical. The issue is that the prohibition of lo tichanem, it is used in today's, it is used lehalacha in a number of instances. So that's where, like for example, For example, selling, are you allowed to sell land? Let's say Shemitah is coming. So one of the solutions to the Shemitah problem is what do? You sell the land to the Arabs, and then you can work on the land. Okay? So number one is, does that work to solve the Shemitah problem? And number two, they discuss, does giving them the land violate the prohibition of los tachaneim? Don't, so that's different. Don't give them chanaya, but don't give them a hold in Eretz Yisrael. Don't give them a hold in Eretz Yisrael, that you're not allowed to sell land to a non-Jew, even in Eretz Yisrael, because the land belongs to us, doesn't belong to them. The counter argument is, you're only selling to them temporarily, you're going to get back in a year, and the reason why you're selling them the land is actually to benefit Jewish survival in Eretz Yisrael. But my point is that Lo Sechaneim is still applicable, is still used now. So this really gets into the question, does this apply? Does this not apply? And so you could argue the Chachmas Adam said that a kol kidei shall yiskar v'yimaham v'yilamdu b'maseihem. So that seems to be the prohibition. I'm wondering that let's say you take the Rabbeinu, let's say you take the Shach's view of Rabbeinu Tam and say that it's idolatry for us and not idolatry for them. So I'm wondering, maybe when it comes to their behavior, so maybe this is not, in other words, there might be a difference between going into their house of worship and in terms of what it says about them in terms of behaving ethically. Because if the concern is getting lured from them, you might be able to make a distinction between a base of Avodah Zarah, that for us, we can't go in, but for them, maybe for them, they're not considered... idolaters from their perspective. They believe there's one overall God. We cannot believe in that. We're held to a different standard. But many rabbonim nowadays. Rav Kook said when it comes to discriminatory provisions against Christians, and Rav Herzog said this, that it doesn't apply to the discriminatory provisions against pagans don't apply to modern-day Christians. They follow the Meiri when it comes to discriminatory provisions. So I would think that maybe that might apply also here. The key is you're not getting drawn after their bad ways. So I think a good argument can be made for that. Okay? Okay. So...